What's up, Nashville? Welcome to the Local Wave Conversations, the Nashville Underground. It's me, Alex McWilliam, the host. This is episode 40. We're already here. We're 40 episodes deep. I really can't thank the man that I just went out to Mickey's Tavern with, Kyle Monroe, enough, our producer, for letting me do 40 episodes in his incredible space, the Tiny Tape Room, which if you're a band and you would like to record, you should check out at thetinytaperoom.com. But for real, that is for real, thank you guys. It's unbelievable that this podcast has even done anything in the city, much less getting listeners in Tokyo, getting listeners in Sweden, just all over the world. It's so nuts, and I can't thank you enough that we've gotten 40 episodes in. This one is extremely special to me. This is an episode I've been waiting to do since quite literally the start of the podcast, when I made the list of people that I wanted to be on this podcast in the beginning, the dream people. This is one of them. Luke Granerid, I believe is how you say his name. I could be totally messing that up, and I'm sorry, Luke, if I am. But he has played in Blood and Ink band Friends, which eventually turned into Equal Vision and 6131 Records band Better Off, which is just such a good band. And then he now plays in Gideon, also on Equal Vision Records. And this episode goes pretty deep into his entire catalog. He's also plays in this awesome band called Cash Basket. He's played in a band called Worker, which we had Ryan Rado on very early in the podcast, and he was the singer of Worker. So go check out that episode as well. But Luke has been in every single band. And so this episode was so cool because not only is it kind of a history of Nashville's underground alternative scene, but it's also a history of Luke. And Luke has been a force in this scene for almost a decade now. And it goes pretty deep into Better Off and how everything went down with that. And if you know anything about that to begin with, that'll be super interesting to you. I can't thank him enough for coming on. This was such an incredible episode. I'm so proud of the conversation that we had. And if you like Better Off, you'll be happy to know they've got two new songs out, Bad Habit and Head Down, which they've put out this year, both produced by Tate Mercer, a couple singles from something that and maybe an album that might come later, who knows. But before we get into it, I would like to encourage you to go to patreon.com/thelocalwave, where you can become a supporter of The Local Wave, and it's only $5 a month. We wanted to have a tier that was affordable for everybody. And so it's just $5 a month, simple and affordable. And if you like The Local Wave and would like to financially support it, you can go to patreon.com/thelocalwave. And if you can't give financially, just give us a follow at The Local Wave on all social media platforms. And if you want to reach out to me directly for sponsorship, for being a guest on the show, just email me localwavepod@gmail.com. No, the just localwavepod@gmail.com. So anyway, I can't thank you guys enough. We're here 40 episodes deep, and I'm so excited about it. So here is our conversation with Luke. Podcast starts here. Okay, so yeah, just had to get that out of the way.
Yeah, we'll get back to it.
I've never done that before. Just what? Had like a really solid, like
a solid start.
Cut. Yeah, yeah. I guess one time, but no, I don't know. There was one time I had to edit stuff out because somebody said something they shouldn't. They didn't like realize it was recording, and they said some shit about somebody.
Can we talk about what that is in this episode?
No, we can't. I would not like to do that.
That'd be sick.
So, well, bro, okay. What are you
Understandable.
Doing? You're a world traveler now.
These days. Yeah.
You had kind of a weird glow up in a lot of ways, you know what I mean?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And different experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It must be insane going from, like, you know, you had Better Off and all your, like, I mean, you haven't played heavy music in a while, and now you're jamming Gideon.
Yeah. Heavy music has been, like, intermittent between bands, but yeah. Not as intensely as I have been lately.
Where have you been able to go because of Gideon? What's
first,
been your favorite places?
Japan was the favorite place by far, by a long shot.
Been there.
And
thankfully, I can say that.
Yeah. It's amazing. And that was number one. Budapest is my second favorite place that we've been.
That's crazy.
That was amazing.
I would have never even ever thought to go there.
Me neither. I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then we got there and it was like, oh, this is one of the coolest places we've been so far on this tour.
What's so cool about it?
I think the architecture was the main... Well, I don't think. I know the architecture was my main favorite part about it. It's just like all the historic buildings had these tiles that were multicolored, and they do these designs in these like primary color tiles all over these, like, mixed with like a brown tile as like a background. It's super... super cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Man. It's mm-hmm. so crazy. You've been gone for so long.
I know. Last year, for sure. This year is not that bad, but last year we did 145 days.
Yeah, it seemed like as soon as you got in Gideon, it was just like off to the races.
It really was. Yeah. And which is awesome. That's what
did you write their last record with them?
No, I had nothing to do with that. Yeah, I started playing with them right after I came out. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Man, I was trying to think of all the memories that I have of you playing, because there are so fucking many. And I was also trying to do research on all the bands that you have, and there are also
there's a lot
so
of them,
many of those. Uh-huh. So I'm going to start with the good one, Veritas.
The beginning, almost the beginning.
You know, well, it's funny. I remember, like, maybe a year ago or a couple years ago, like, some video surfaced on Facebook of one of your, like, tour journals from Veritas.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was, like, so weird seeing all these people that at the time I didn't know, but now I'm all friends with.
Yeah.
Just B in high school.
We're
and
so
B
young,
just
yeah.
normal little Christian hardcore kids.
It was sick. Good times. Those are the best times.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was fun.
Because it was like you and John Michael.
Yeah, that was the first tour. I think any of us except David maybe were on. That was the first tour. Hobbs.
Oh, okay.
That was the first tour any of us had done.
How old were you?
I was 18. I had just graduated high school, like maybe a month earlier.
Was that like your first band or?
Wasn't the first band. First band was called Out of Clay We Are Created.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah. Christian metalcore.
Yeah, well.
Christian,
obviously.
Confused core. It's like a little bit of all the different cores, you know? But that was...
What year was that?
That was 2000, maybe 7 or 6, something like that.
Little baby Luke.
Maybe 2008 a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was young. I was the only one that could drive.
How old were you?
We started when I was 15 and ended when I was 16, yeah.
Dang. Is that when Veritas began?
Very soon after that, yeah.
And you went to high school with, like, Evan from Body Origami and John Michael, who was in Better Off and Pocket Science.
He didn't go to high school with me, but we ended up hanging out a lot because of shows.
Yeah.
And, like, we met, like, I lived in Brentwood, Franklin area, which is south of Nashville, and they lived in the Hendersonville, Goodlettsville area, which is north of Nashville. And then we'd all go to these shows in Nashville at, like, the Anchor and Rocketown and stuff like that, the Muse. And
this is the third time in a row. Well, you're the third guest in a row that I've had. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, it's fine.
But that has been a local Nashville person, which, and so the Muse has been brought up in like multiple times.
It's a crazy spot.
Yeah.
I definitely miss it. I wish it was still a thing. I feel like everybody is missing out on one of the most fun places to experience.
A very dangerous place from what I heard.
Maybe there were dangerous things that went on there, but I never felt like I was in danger while I was there, you know? But it did feel, it was like an adrenaline rush.
Right.
Big time. To just like, you know, you park in the parking lot of the adult bookstore and it's right next to the Muse, and the Muse is like almost under a bridge under the interstate. So it's like just sketchy looking.
Yeah.
And they're I mean, they had like prostitutes and stolen MacBooks. that they trafficked through the second floor of the building, and that's why it got shut down.
Whoa!
But yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah. And they disguised it as like a kickboxing studio, which I guess they just figured nobody that went to shows is going to be like, "What's going on in the kickboxing studio right now?" So, yeah, it was just fun.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I mean, the Anchor and Rocket Town, like those places, I watched like videos on Zambui.com about when, and it's like what made me want to come to Nashville. And so all of you guys got to actually go to all those shows.
Yeah.
And that I'm like forever going to be jealous of you for experiencing that.
It feels like now looking back, it feels like a very Nashville exclusive experience because most of those bands didn't really, I mean, A Plea for Purging got pretty big outside of Nashville.
Speak a little, just like a little bit closer, Mike.
A Plea for Purging got pretty big outside of Nashville, but the other bands didn't really, and they're pretty short-lived, but everybody in the Nashville area would come out to see them. So there'd be like 1,000, maybe not 1,000, but like 800 kids in a room to see these bands.
At a local show.
Yeah, all locals. So it was sick. It was very cool.
And you got all those big metalcore bands at the time were all from the South anyway. Mm-hmm. So you were just,
they were just rolling through and then locals would open and then that just helped the scene grow more, I guess.
Yeah. And you, I mean, you were a huge part of that at the time.
I was.
Or maybe near the tail end of it.
Definitely after the tail end of it. I would, or maybe at the tail end of it, but.
Because I moved right at the tail end. I moved here in 2011, so that was like right at the tail end of Plea still existing, and you were playing in bands at that point.
Yeah, yeah,
that
definitely.
Were a thing.
I would say at that point, that's when shows had stopped being so big, because a lot of those bigger local bands had broken up. But Plea was still a band, and they still had big shows in Nashville. Maybe not quite as big compared to back in the day, but... had a burp. What the group that I was in this of the scene that I was a part of kind of was like the embers at the end of the fire. You know what I'm saying? It's just like we were the people just kind of playing shows to each other at that point, and then it eventually started picking back up again.
Yeah, well, you. Right, I mean, I kind of experienced your whole wave of like bands. That was like the second, like the, I guess I'll just call it the little emo wave. That happened, like in the, earlier this decade, which is so insane to me to even be able to say
earlier this decade,
you know, like, like the fact that like the whole Courtesy Drop, Better Off, Daisy Head, I mean, what I like secrets, I mean, secret stuff. Like,
there's
like,
a lot.
It's weird to think there's that like that is like now something to be looked back upon as like, man, those were like, that was like a moment. Kinda,
yeah, for sure.
You know?
Yeah, I feel like it was. Yeah, it still is kind of a moment. Like, yeah. Well, it's changing, but yeah, definitely.
It's weird.
Yeah. Free Throw was one of those bands too, for sure.
And they're now like
they're killing it. Yeah.
Way big moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, where do you want to start?
I don't know, dude. Wherever you want to start.
Because I was like, at this point, I could just name releases and you just tell them about me. Or you could just tell me about them.
Yeah.
And the people.
That would be fun.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I think the first big one that happened was that Friends tape.
Mm-hmm. That was the first project that, like, that me and our friend, well, me and the guys in the band really, like, toured on. And, well, for me at least, they had played... Oh, I'm getting my words all tangled up. Friends was a combination of me and Dependency, which was a melodic hardcore band based in the area, and they had toured. And then they had toured with my old band Veritas, which was me and a couple other guys that ended up being in Nashville bands too. But so we started this band Friends just because Veritas had broken up and I wanted to do something new, and we put out this EP, and that was the first time that we really started booking our own shows out of town and like planning these like week long little tours, whatever you want to call them. And yeah, that was the first real attempt at anything.
I saw you guys with Dependency at Rocket Town. I want to say it might've been my second show I saw in all of Nashville.
Yeah.
I remember Blindside was my first show. For
that's sick.
Reason.
Yeah.
It was kind of sick, but
I still listen to the top two Blindside songs. For
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. They left a bad taste in my mouth. I'll remember this forever because they ended with fucking Pitiful, which, like, of course.
Yeah.
And then they came back and encored with, like, the slowest new song on the planet.
It's
and
a bad
you're
move.
Like, you just ruined
yeah.
the whole vibe.
They're European, though. They got a whole different they got a whole different flavor. You yeah. know?
No, but, like, I saw it was you and Dependency. I'm probably mixing up shows, like, to think of who else was on that show, but I remember Mikey Rowe was in the band, and I only
might
remember
have been Stand
this
Together Fest
because we talked about it wasn't Stand Together Fest.
Okay.
Because I remember I couldn't go to that and I wanted to, but I remember Mikey was in the band because y'all played that lead line that wasn't on the tape that was that you
a
did
Michael
play
Rowe
live
original.
And it was lit.
Yeah. I like that lead on in there
it
too.
Was pretty sick.
It made it way heavier.
I know.
Yeah.
I just listened to that today.
Really?
Yeah. I still have the tape.
Really? That's cool. Yeah, I have a couple copies still too. Yeah.
What do you think of those songs?
Man, I think they're pretty bad, but it's fun to go back and listen to it for sure.
Yeah. Were you always that as like prolific, like writing songs back then? Or that just kind of come with time?
I definitely wouldn't. No, definitely not an avid songwriter at that point. That was just like still dabbling, I guess. Yeah. Cause like, you know, that's a 4-song EP and they're all like under 3 minutes, if that. So, at that point it was just messing around with the new stuff. Cause I never sang and well, I hadn't been singing and playing guitar in a band in a while. And I hadn't played in a band with people that I hadn't like been around constantly. Cause it was high school bands before that. So
right.
it was all people that I was with all day. And this was with people from, you know, Charles is from North Carolina, John's from Indiana, and those were the two people and friends at the time in the beginning. So, you know, it's like people from different walks of life a little bit, and just a different vibe when you're writing music together. So I think that's like, that's what that staple was for me, for sure.
Yeah. I went on to see friends play like 10 million shows where you guys played all of the I Think I'm Leaving songs.
Yeah.
Like forever before the record came out.
Yeah. A lot of drama behind that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But behind the album being released, but you know, some biz bullshit.
That sucks. Yeah, it was for, I remember it took forever because I don't know when this, I don't remember the date exactly, but I remember you guys opened at the end for Into It Over It. And you, I think it was one of the last times you ever played Friends material.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And you were so bummed, like playing those songs. Like I remember, like I
like as in tired of it, or
yeah, like I could just, I just remember you playing like Eat Me Alive and just being so
just over it.
Yeah, like yeah. like not even remotely stoked to play that song.
Yeah, I don't even know why. I mean, we were young, so I guess you hold on to things, and you're like, you know, we can't play new stuff yet or whatever, but
yeah,
the rules are never really that strict. So
was there other names before you came with Better Off?
There were, I can't remember any of them. But we definitely were, that was like a struggle to come up with a name. And then eventually we were all so tired of arguing over names that we were like, okay, well let's just take this, these two words from this song that we already wrote. And yeah, that was an easy compromise.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I remember the day I left for Warped Tour, like being on the Megabus and seeing the announcement that you guys had gotten signed to 6131. And that was like, I remember that was such a big deal.
Yeah, it was to us too, for sure.
Like in that, like, I mean, you guys were playing at Cafe Coco or the Owl Farm, I think, right before that, where I saw you. I've seen you play so many fucking times, but I'm not upset about it. I'm just like, now that I'm like saying them out loud, I'm like, holy shit, I've seen you play.
Yeah,
so
I've been
many
busy. I've been busy.
Times. But yeah, y'all just played so many times. But And I like remember just being like so proud of you guys, like, because I didn't know anyone at that point. Like, none of my friends had ever gotten like signed to a record label or anything.
Yeah.
Did that seem like you guys like won the lottery because you signed to this like legitimate, like, not that Blutnik isn't legitimate, but yeah, like, it was 6131 is it? Yeah. It was a step up, you know?
It felt like we had just like stumbled into, it felt like a joke, because I feel we just like, none of us take ourselves too seriously. And when we end up in these situations where it's like, we get an awesome opportunity, we're just all like, how on earth? I guess lottery is a good description, but it's funnier than a lottery. Cause yeah, it's like, you know, we farted and then we signed to 6131. Yeah. That's what it feels like. But cause that Friends EP was written in one weekend and then recorded in another weekend. So it was like, no, we didn't put thought behind it.
Right.
But I feel like the thing that was carrying us was that we were like, we were having fun together, you know, a lot of fun. And we made sure, like, well, we didn't make sure, but we took videos and like, you know, nobody was really touring as much as us in Nashville playing this kind of music at the time. So maybe people were inspired and other people being inspired us. So it was like, I don't know. It was just a very good time.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing too is, I mean, your melodies have kind of always been there. Like, even in their baby stages on that EP, like, I listen to those songs and like, obviously they sound like, you
younger,
know,
yeah,
a dude who's just learning how to sing, a dude, you know, someone who's like, obviously doesn't have the experience that you hear when you listen to like Beach or something.
Yeah.
But like, but I mean, someone could say the same about Tell All Your Friends by Taking Back Sunday. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like obviously, Adam is a much better singer now, but yeah, everyone loves that one record.
I hope that people say that for every single record, you know?
Yeah.
I'd rather be growing up than not growing up at all. So, yeah.
But I just feel like it was there, you know, like, you, and I don't know, your branding, like, the, there was a whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there, it looked, it was a professional operation from the jump for, you know, just
Charles is definitely the one that made it professional. No doubt about that.
Yeah.
As far as image and design and all that, and booking tours and, you know, all that stuff.
And you guys wrote all the, I think, so moving on to, I Think I'm Leaving, you guys had all those songs written like well before, like, you ever recorded and did that stuff.
Yeah, we did. Like, most of them. I mean, first song was written when I was 19.
Because I remember by the time the record came out, you guys were already playing new songs.
Yeah, I think I was 21 when the record came out.
That's
so
crazy.
Yeah, it was a
that must have been exhausting.
It was just annoying to wait, but it was also a learning experience just to see how, like, you know, business works in that world. But it's cool. Yeah. Definitely don't like it. Waiting around.
Right.
But yeah.
And then you got cool vinyl and you got the whole rollout and everything.
Uh-huh.
And was that when like people started to kind of pay attention? I remember like dude from Newfound Glory from the jump was kind of like, this is awesome. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
you guys got some very cool opportunities.
Yeah. That record was definitely the launching point, I'd say, for sure.
What were like some of those things in the beginning that you remember? You're like a 21-year-old kid in
Newfound Glory tour was one. And I mean, when I say tour, I mean, we're talking 8 days maybe, but still it's like, yeah. Newfound Glory, Catalyst by Newfound Glory was the first CD I ever bought with my own money. So it was like, and that was like I grew up Christian in a Christian family. So that was my introduction kind of to like secular music.
I remember,
completely on my own.
I remember being at a party with you and Charles, and you had said yes to that tour. I think you were calling it the sick tour, like, because you couldn't talk about it.
It's a good code name.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Newfound Glory and We Are the In Crowd and Fireworks, who ended up being people that we became pretty well friends with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, I mean, being 21, just playing in front of like, what, 500, 600 people a night?
It really varied big time.
Yeah.
But yeah, big crowds for sure, bigger than we were used to. We played House of Blues on that tour and played to like 1,000 people.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe 1,400 on the biggest night. And yeah.
Do you think you made it at that point?
No, because we still, like, Better Off never made money. but it felt like we'd accomplished something for sure. And like, I don't know, but without doing it, you feel like that's not possible for you to play in front of that many people. And then
yeah.
It's like you open that door and it's like, oh, we can get our foot in the door here and really try to do some stuff. So, yeah.
You kind of have always struck me as a person who kind of is always thinking about what's next anyway, mm-hmm. too. So even Definitely. When you have like those big opportunities, I mean, even as you talk about them now, you kind of mention them in a nonchalant type of way, you mm-hmm. know, and mm-hmm. just because you're like, yeah, that's cool, but we need to figure out what's going to happen next.
Yeah. I guess when we played those shows, it still felt like it wasn't like our thing. We were still playing to Newfound Glory's crowd, you know, and
yeah.
that's not the ultimate goal, I guess, when you're playing in a band, but it still was like, how are we doing this? I don't even get it.
Was there any other? I mean, I remember seeing you open for mm-hmm. Motion City.
Yeah, Motion City soundtrack. And Copeland was on like two dates of that. So those are two amazing bands. Early November was on a couple dates of that too. That was amazing.
Because I also saw you with Early November.
Yeah. We toured with them twice. Yeah. I think those are the two big tours off that record that we did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember specifically when I heard Garden State of Mind for the first time,
mm-hmm.
Thinking like this is a whole other thing, mm-hmm. you know, like kind of realizing
yeah.
like you're not just a dude who is in a local band and just writes like, you know, just like writes some jams and we're going to play, yeah. you know, an open for a band. You know what
still,
I mean? Like,
I mean, definitely still a dude that plays in local bands.
Yes,
that's, I am.
You
sure,
are. But. You are that. But I mean, I realized you had like that song was to me when I first heard it, I like couldn't believe it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah.
it just kind of was a showing me like, oh, this guy has something here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'd still love that.
Yeah. I think that record, well, as a songwriter, I was learning to like let go of insecurities because you end up writing genres of music based on what other people are listening to because you just want them to like it. And that record was more like, okay, well, we like Tidal Fight. We like hardcore music, but we also happen to like Jimmy World and we listen to Reliant K and we listen to like music that's just poppy.
We covered
and,
Reliant K.
Yeah, we covered so Reliant
video
K.
Of that.
Yeah, it's a good, that was a fun show. Michael Rowe was in the band at the time. Yeah. That was actually still friends when we did
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. But
I had that written down for whatever reason. I just remember that was one of the videos I found when I was Googling.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, you end up putting yourself in a box because you want to fit into the group of people that you've been with for a long time. And that was the first step kind of away from that box and just being mm-hmm. like, well, we don't really know what we're doing anyway. So let's just try to do something a little different from what we've been doing. And, yeah, Matt McClellan, who recorded the first two albums or recorded, I think I'm Leaving in Milk, definitely was a big part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How so?
He was just encouraging. He's had more experience being around bands and in the music industry than we had at the time and still have to this day. But he was the one that was like, well, you could sing this part that way, but you could just sing it like this and it wouldn't be just like, you know, another person influenced by Tidal Fight or whatever, you know. And not to talk bad about Tidal Fight because I love them, but
no, but I mean they're
we were trying to get away from that.
Yeah, I mean they were the band to rip off at mm-hmm, that,
yeah.
know, at one point in time.
Yeah, they're just super influential.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's always funny like those bands end up getting like. I mean, I remember Under Oath was that way for such a long
time.
You know, and like then you get the temptation to like shit on Under Oath, but it's like no, they're just a very influential band.
Mm-hmm.
I always kind of said that. You guys ripping off Jimmy World was like 5 years too early, you know,
maybe,
like,
yeah.
Well, I just thought I was
for
like,
our age group. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I thought like, you know, stuff comes around every 20 years, you know, and that self-titled didn't come out till 2001. So I was like,
mm-hmm.
I think only now is it going to start to become cool to rip off Jimmy World.
Yeah, maybe. Hopefully.
Because they weren't necessarily like a legendary. I mean, they were a legendary act, but like
in a different way, for
yeah,
sure.
And yeah. Now they're kind of going into that like super legendary mm-hmm. stage of mm-hmm. their career, and yeah. Now it's going to be cool to rip them off.
Yeah.
You guys are ahead of your time.
For sure.
What about Method? Because that was the, you guys get signed to Equal Vision, yeah, which is insane.
Yeah, that's my favorite label, was my favorite
label
for sure.
Tell me all about that. Tell me all about signing Equal Vision.
Well, I'll preface it with my favorite band growing up was Coheed and Cambria by a long shot. Have seen them more than any band probably that I haven't toured with. And they were on Equal Vision, so I was just like an Equal Vision fan. Plus Converge was on there, Bane was on there. It's just like, the more music I got into, the more places I saw Equal Vision were tied into those kinds of music, those kinds of bands that I liked. And yeah, I mean, we had a booking agent and a manager that were just like trying to get the word out there about us. And then we played with Balance and Composure in Nashville, and it was Balance, us, Daisy Head, and Courtesy Drop all played that show. And Equal Vision flew, our A&R guy from Equal Vision, Dan, flew out and to see us for the first time. And that was like, we had dinner and just, it was like, yeah, let's do this because that would be awesome. So we did. Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
So where did Meth Head come from?
That was like the trial run. We were with a producer, Arun Bali, who plays in Saves the Day, and he did produced Milk. But he was like, you know, we wanted to see how we worked with them, and he worked at a studio here in Nashville called 4115. And yeah, basically just got in the studio with two songs, and we were like, okay, let's see how this goes. And he produced it. Tate Mercer engineered it, and yeah, got two songs out of it, and that was kind of the beginning of our relationship with him.
Because that's where you guys were touring on that when I saw you with
Motion City. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was that like the first big tour that you got, like being in Equal Vision?
Maybe. I don't really know. I can't remember. It was either that or Newfound Glory. We might have started getting big tours right when we signed to Equal Vision. There's just like a lot of time where we weren't doing stuff or like we weren't announcing anything. So
I listened to a whole revisionist history Malcolm Gladwell podcast about how memory is all fucked up and we all like don't know actual, like nothing that we're actually talking about is the actual truth.
I like to be vague so that I can never be wrong. Called out on being wrong about the timeline.
Yeah, I drove down for that show to Atlanta because Copeland was
one of my favorite bands too, for sure.
Yeah, and they had like just gotten back together at that point, and Chelsea, one of Chelsea's favorite albums is Commit This to Memory, and then you guys were playing, so it was just like a whole, that's where I met Will Steinbrecher. Yeah. Shout out Will.
Mm-hmm.
Great dude.
Yep, great dude.
And then I introduced him to his girlfriend recently, so there's that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I love
full
life.
Circle.
Life
boom.
Just
better off
works
got
its own way
Will
out through everything.
A girlfriend.
Yeah.
Crazy. So Better Off did something good.
Yeah, we did.
Not the records you made.
No.
The fact that
it was
Will
the
got
relationship.
A girlfriend years later.
That's all I ever wanted.
Oh my God. So when did you start writing the songs for Milk?
Pretty much immediately after.
Well, you kind of had, Bloom came out in between this, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure when Meth Head came out. Maybe 2015.
Yeah, I don't
something
know.
Like that, yeah. And,
but Bloom was in between, I think I'm leaving in Milk.
Yeah, yeah. I was bored and needed to do something, so that's what I did.
You just wrote the saddest songs.
Yeah.
Which sad you gave to me on vinyl here.
Yeah, there they are.
Yeah.
I love that album cover.
Yeah, it's Evan?
Yeah.
I do.
Evan Davis.
And okay, so this is what was the fucking project you guys did together recently?
Wire Drops, yeah.
I could not, I was like searching, scouring the internet, Googling as hard as I could, which I am not good at apparently.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find it. And I could not think of the name for the life of me.
Yeah.
So
we weren't pushing it hard, yeah.
Yeah. We can talk about that a little later.
Yeah,
but
we'll get to
it. It's like way
it's in the future.
I could not think of the name at all.
Bar Drops.
So you just got bored and wrote this?
Yeah. That was also written like maybe a week, something like that. And then I didn't have hardly any money. So I hit up Matt McClellan and asked him if he would cut me a deal. He was like, yeah, I can cut you a deal. but you have to do it in like a really short amount of time. And so we came up with a number, and he said, you can, if you want to pay that much, you have to do it in 3 days. So we were just like, okay. And then we just went down and recorded that record in 3 days.
That's crazy.
It was sick.
That was kind of the first time where I feel like you as prolific songwriter, like kind of showed its head, you know?
It was the beginning of something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like trying to write as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there was a period where right before that, maybe, where I was writing like one song a day for like a month, something like that.
Just as an exercise, or yeah, just because you felt like you had to?
Just as an exercise, just like, because it was, I was trying to get ready to write the next Better Off record, and would just write a song a day, mostly bad
stuff. How long
stuff.
Did that last?
A month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, it was just like, well, I don't really need to write a song a day. I could just work on a song at a time and try to make them good. So it eventually developed into that, and that's kind of the beginning of Bloom, maybe.
Yeah. How do you feel about this record now?
Now when I listen to
it? You just posted about it like a couple days ago.
Yeah.
Or yesterday. Today? I don't know.
I think it was yesterday. Yeah.
I just retweeted it today.
Yeah. So. But now when I listen to it, I mean, I just hear all the flaws in it. I'm just feel so critical of like past albums, because I know they could be better if I had done them more, you know.
How do you feel about the actual songs themselves?
I like them.
Rather than the technical side of what could have been.
I like them. The story behind it is fun to think back on. I mean,
what's this? Tell me the story.
I mean, Peter Wonka played drums, and we have been close friends since we were in like fifth grade. And this was the first time we were like playing music together in a while, because he played in Veritas, mm-hmm. and he still plays in Body Origami. But yeah, we just like got in a room, and I said, here are these songs that I wrote. Do you just want to write the most simple drums you can to them? It's just going to be droney, emo, like Pedro the Lion meets Carissa's Weird kind of thing. And still poppy, a little bit of Death Cab in there. But
I don't think you can't write something not poppy.
No, I can't. I don't even know why people listen to music that's not poppy.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it was just fun, like going down to the studio with him and like basically just having a fun 3 days and popping out this record that people have liked, at least in my friend group. So
yeah. I mean, it's cool that you got to have it pressed to vinyl.
Mm-hmm. Like that was lucky. Broken Circles. Yeah.
Shout out to Broken Circles.
Yeah, thank you, Broken Circles.
Where did
probably
that
regrets
come about?
It now, but
yeah. He was just putting out a lot of Nashville bands that I don't like.
Yeah, he has been putting out a lot of Nashville bands. Yeah.
How did that come about, the Broken Circles connect?
When I played in Worker, we played Worker, for those who are listening and don't know, Worker is a band that I played in with Ryan Rado, legendary.
Yeah.
Neurology,
LSDP.
Yeah.
Still.
Heavy band.
Still rips.
Still pretty cool.
I think that's still the title. Like, one of the best heavy releases of the decade. Like, I still think
that's
that
a bold
EP
statement.
Rips. I don't give a shit. Like, yo.
I don't know. Could have had heavier breakdowns, but it was fun. That was another big learning
experience.
I think
sonically,
for me,
though,
sure.
Like, it's one of those things where it doesn't sound like anything else.
Mm-hmm. Like that's what we were going for.
Yeah,
for sure.
And like sonically, yeah. You know, like, and so that
Jay Hall is a big
what
reason
kind
why.
Of is what kind of makes that EP so, mm-hmm. in my mind, so good. I
Thank
saw you.
You
play with Worker many times.
Yeah,
you?
Definitely.
Did you help write that EP?
Yeah, that was the one that I was on. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, Worker played Hope's Falls' first reunion show in North Carolina. And Brent from Broken Circles was there because he had pressed a couple Hope's Fall records,
mm-hmm.
and released them, you know, while they were not a band. And met him there, and then did this Bloom demo. It was like a 4-song demo that I recorded just with like an amp in my room on my MacBook input mic. And sent it to him, and I was like, I want to put this EP out digitally. Do you think your label would do that? He was like, yeah, sure. And I said, I didn't think you'd say yes, but maybe I could do a full length and you could do the vinyl. And he was like, yeah, sure. And that was it.
Yeah. That's sick.
Yeah. Nice guy.
It's so you have been in so many bands that in an attempt to talk about things linear, what's that word?
Linearly?
Linearly.
Leonard Lee.
In a linear way. To talk about things in a linear way, I'm running into other projects that you have been in.
Like yeah, it's hard.
It's fucking hard, dude. This
the
is
timeline
why
is confusing because they also happened at the same time.
Right.
So
what? That came out in like 2011?
Yeah, 2011 or maybe 2012, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I definitely saw you play with them a couple times, and then I saw you, like a reunion show with Worker. Y'all played a Snapcase cover, and everyone went off.
I don't think I was even in the reunion show. That band had a lot of different lineups. Yeah,
I saw you play a Snapcase cover.
We played the Snapcase cover pretty often.
Oh yeah,
yeah. We played Zombie Prescription by Snapcase a lot.
I just remember singing at the end, and people like lost their.
Yeah,
you played that opening riff.
We played
it
in Drop G.
It.
Yeah. It was cool.
It was sick. Back to the Clinic is the hardest song.
It's a hard song.
Like
some deep lyrics on that EP too.
Pissed.
Yeah.
It's such a pissed record.
Yeah.
Were you playing with that? I remember. Oh my god. I'm like. This is,
I don't even remember what we were talking about before now.
I do.
You do?
All the way to. We had gotten all the way to Meth Head.
Oh, and then Bloom. Yeah, okay.
And then Bloom, and then we went back to Worker. So I apologize to everybody listening. Okay.
They don't care.
It was not linear.
They don't even hear what we're saying. They're just listening to us talk.
ASMR, dude.
Yeah.
I have an incredible ASMR. Just kidding. I do not at all. Fuck.
That one's free.
You got to pay for the rest. You want to hear Luke do ASMR?
If you want to hear me do ASMR, follow my podcast, Luke Does ASMR.
At Luke Does ASMR.
Yeah, I got a Twitter, got an Instagram, got a LinkedIn.
Holy shit. So, back on the Better Off track. Mm-hmm. When did you guys write Milk? And also, so you had lineup changes between I Think I'm Leaving and Milk as well.
Yeah, John Michael ended up quitting like right before I Think I'm Leaving was released, and because he just couldn't tour and had a lot of stuff going on at home. And then Hunter Walls joined right before Meth Head. He helped write Meth
Head. My Children, My Bride guitar player,
yes.
Hunter Walls.
Yes,
as he's most
the advocate,
known for.
My Children, My Bride. And As Cities Burn.
Yeah, now As Cities Burn.
And
one time I saw him play with a country band.
Yes, so. Country guitar player. Great country guitar player. Inappropriate.
Nice.
But necessary.
When Evan Davis is on it, he burped like four times. It was sick.
You can't hold it in. You can't.
Okay, so we got the lineup changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when do you start writing Milk?
I don't think it ever started like at a specific period. I think we just started right away.
What was the first song you wrote?
Probably Dresser Drawer. No, I take it back. Meth Head was going to be on Milk, and then we just decided not to put it on there. And then after that, This Day Will Never End. Unhappy, that was the first one. Mm. Unhappy and This Day Will Never End were the first two.
Those are pretty good songs to start with.
Yeah, I like those. This Day Will Never End is definitely my favorite on that record.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm still pretty partial to either Dresser Drawer or I Love Whatever, I Don't Care.
Mm-hmm.
That song's hard.
Critics did not like it.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I say critics, I mean like maybe one or two like reviews that said like, I don't get this song. What do you not care
What's
about?
What's not they get about it?
I don't know.
You don't care.
Yeah, exactly. It ain't my thing, man.
I mean, bro. Empty Handed was a jam.
Yeah,
that
was cool.
Tell me about that song.
The beginning, it got started because we were trying to rip off Foo Fighters. The beginning of Wasting Light, the first song on that album. I forget what that's called, but it's the first song. It was harmonics. And then, yeah, I mean, that we were major Foo Fighter phase during Milk.
Yeah.
We all were listening to Foo Fighters so much.
Well, you had the Motorhead interlude,
yeah,
too.
That's a ripoff of Foo Fighters, straight up, and Queens of the Stone Age. So
I listened to that today, and I was just like, why don't you just, was that going to be the new direction?
No, it was just funny. It was just funny to, like, have a song like that and then call it interlude. Like, the rest of the record is way calmer.
Yeah, way calmer, and just, like, emo record.
Take a break from resting and listen to this fast, angry song. Yeah.
Well, the fucked up part is it's sick. Like you wrote it like you actually play that kind of music.
Yeah.
You even had the like, ooh.
Yeah.
Like,
That's the main reason why I wanted to do that song is because I could go ooh before like a riff. It's cool.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to do that.
That's crazy that people didn't. Did people like Milk when it came out?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because I feel like once that record was, I mean, you had the alt press website, mm-hmm. like, plastered everywhere. Like, it felt like Equal Vision had really put a lot behind that
record. Oh, yeah, they definitely did. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was received really, really well. I mean, that's about all I could say about it. Not a lot. We didn't tour on it. We did one tour on it, maybe.
Yeah.
We were on tour with Bayside and early November when it came out, and then
I remember
the two tours after were just both disasters. So it was like,
what was the second one?
Pentimento, which was me with all fill-ins.
Oh,
because all the other guys and I had just had a disagreement and we're just like, okay, whatever. We don't want to do this tour, so that's fine.
And then they ended up just everybody quit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave them an ultimatum.
Oh. Okay. Because
I'm a driven person, so I just like want to do things full on, and not everybody was in a place to do that. And I said, well, either I need you guys to be on like the same page as me trying to really do this and tour, or maybe I need to go find something else because I really want to go on tour and like do it while I'm young. And so. Charles was the one that suggested, like, well, I don't want to see the band fall apart, so I would rather you take this and keep doing it than it just not be a thing at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I look back on that and I wish that I had handled it a little differently, but I did what I wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I feel like this story is fast approaching the unfortunate end of Better Off.
Yeah.
I remember looking at, before you erased all the Instagram pictures, mm-hmm. for a long time, that last picture was you guys playing the first day of that May Day Parade tour.
Yeah.
And I kind of have this weird fascination with pictures of videos of things right before big things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I'm the same way.
Yeah. like seeing like backstage stuff or like, or I don't know, like a football, a football game, like seeing the losing team's locker room right before the game starts. It's like, they have no idea they're going to lose the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
no idea.
Like they're just stoked. Like, and they have no clue. And that's like, and I looked at that picture and thought that like, you guys are just playing and having a great time.
Yeah.
And you had no idea what was coming the next day.
Mm-hmm. It was, next day.
So, do you regret how you handled the situation?
I wish I had worded it better. But at the same time, I look back on it and had no help from anybody that could have given me guidance. And so what I wrote was just out of, like, frustration and anger for this person that, like, who I, at the time, saw as somebody that was ruining something that I'd built for like 6 years. And that's not really true, but I was definitely frustrated. So I definitely regret the wording for sure. I think that I could have been much more mature about that. But I also wrote an apology statement and nobody really cared. So it's like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, that was kind of the weird part, is none of it had to do with you.
Yeah.
You know, in a certain sense. And it's, as we've gone on, and unfortunately, these types of scenarios have become almost commonplace with mm-hmm. bands that we like, you know.
Yeah.
The art of the apology has become a thing, mm-hmm. you know, and people have figured out how to do it
yeah.
the best way and still continue on as a band, you mm-hmm. know. And I don't think at that point that was there, mm-hmm. you know. There was no, like, this hadn't really happened before. This was a pretty new, you know, there was no, like, yeah, this wasn't
era,
like a Me
yeah.
Too movement thing. This, mm-hmm. you know, this was like way before that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to know, you know, it was hard to know what to do.
Yeah, it was.
It seems like.
Yeah. And, on top of all this, just like talking to the booking agent, manager and label people, it's just like all of them are bailing so fast. That was like, well, you know what? There's nothing here anyway now, so I'm pissed and whatever. You know, whatever. I don't care. Sorry.
God.
But
what did you do directly after that?
Nothing. Got a job. Worked for my dad for a while. Worked at another office for a while. Same one you did.
Yeah, we were coworkers.
We were coworkers. Yeah.
Just go out and smoke cigs together.
Yeah. Don't tell my mom.
It's like, I mean, we went out and had ice cream together.
We went
sometimes.
Outside and prayed. Yeah. Yeah, I just didn't want to play music really for a while there.
How long did that last?
Not long. Oh, yeah. Maybe like 6 months, something like that. Like I was still working more at just like those office jobs longer than that, but I started writing music again maybe 6 months after, something like that. Yeah.
What did that end up turning into?
That turned into Cash Basket. Yeah. And some other things. Oh, well, actually, rewind. Meter was the first thing I did after that. Yeah.
I have it written down.
Yeah. Meter
was
the first thing.
That was a very weird.
It was a weird one.
That was right.
That was literally like 3 days after.
Really?
Where it was just like, I was like, I'm just going to envelop myself in writing music. Like, that was my immediate, outlet.
Because that's definitely your most out there project.
Yeah, definitely the weirdest.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably the worst. Maybe not the worst. Coolest riffs, but, you know.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I didn't know that was, like, your therapy in a way.
In a way,
to
yeah.
To deal with that.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it was very soon afterwards. And, yeah, so they did that. Then, you know, living situations changed. Life just changed a lot. And then ended up living in Antioch for a while. And when I started writing there, that's what started becoming Cash Basket
the
stuff.
First Cash Basket EP.
That's the exact intention of every album that we put out, is to get your tongue twisted up.
Well, you did it.
Yep.
Good job. The whole band's been worth it.
Yep. It's done.
Because that record's way sadder than the new record.
Mm-hmm.
Genre-wise, it's almost completely different.
Mm-hmm.
What was that sound? Because that was more an extension of Bloom, was it not?
Yeah, definitely. The idea behind that. Like, we skipped another release, I guess, but Bloom became Cash Basket at some point. I recorded an EP with Tate Mercer again. Yeah. And
what release did we skip?
It's the Bash Casket EP. Bash Casket by Cash Basket.
Yeah. Too many. I'm sorry. I have so many things written down.
No, I'm glad. It's like we're entering another world right here where we have to remember all this stupid
this is
stuff.
The post Better Off world.
Yeah.
Man, God. Like, there's, I mean, I'm glad it's Better Off is now back.
Mm-hmm.
With that name and everything, but yeah, it felt like there was a lot of potential there,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I hate to kind of like harp on it and be like,
okay.
Hey, your dreams died, but like,
yeah,
no,
okay.
But it, I mean,
partly due to my own ignorance, but
yeah,
you know, that's okay. That's how you learn things.
Right.
So,
so tell me about writing the first Cash Basket EP.
That was awesome. It was, I wrote most of it by myself and then eventually ended up like finding people that wanted to play in the band. And it was, Chase Lloyd, who plays in Fever Blush and American Roommates, TJ Sanders, who plays in American Roommates, and then, Josh Landreth, who was in Hanging Moon. And, I wrote most of it together. We wrote Far Out as a group. Chase Lloyd actually wrote the melodies. That's the first time I've ever had somebody write a melody for a song that I sang.
Mm-hmm.
and it happened on accident because he showed me a demo that he had, and I listened to it and I was like, this is sick. And then I wrote a song 2 days later and accidentally used the melody from the song that he had sent me. And then I sent it to him and I was like, I just wrote this. What do you think about this? And he said, well, it's the same melody as the song that I sent you. And I was like, oh. So that was cool. We co-wrote is basically what I'm saying. Like
accidentally co-wrote.
Yeah. We mesh really well together when it comes to writing, but, yeah, it was cool. Totally different. Those guys, like TJ and Chase especially, are into types of music that are way different from I'm into.
I mean, all their bands are super out there.
Yeah. So it's cool. It's cool to blend our worlds together a little bit and just like come up with this thing that's cartoony sounding kind of, which I love.
Yeah.
It's like my favorite part about Cash Basket, but
New EP, cartoony is definitely a good word for it.
Yeah. That's the goal with Cash Basket. I feel
a
like.
A disc and a tasket. Again, a tongue twister.
Yeah. We have the next like three releases all planned. What we're going to call them. All tongue twisters.
Yeah.
Can't tell them on here though.
I remember the first time that I heard the song Beach. I was singing. That was another moment. You know, I talked about hearing Garden State of Mind earlier and how I kind of heard it and was like, oh man, this dude can like write a song like for real. And then when I heard Beach, I was like, this is a hit. This is hit song. Like, nice. I knew the chorus of that song by the end of the first time I heard it.
Yeah, people were singing that song at shows before we ever you were one of them for sure.
I did it.
There were a bunch of people. It was surprising locally, you know, but that's actually the
catchiest thing I've ever heard in my life.
That song was actually written right after all the Better Off stuff happened too.
Really?
Yeah,
well, that makes sense considering lyrical content.
Yeah, rather be on a beach.
Yeah, a goddamn beach. I also I remember talking to you at Camberton about the Enneagram, and when I heard that song, I was like, this is the most Enneagram 4 thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yeah.
And for those of you who know the Enneagram, you'll know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think when I took the test, it said it was a 5-wing 4. Is that what it is?
I thought you were a 4-wing 5.
That could be it, too. I don't know.
I
don't give a fuck.
I remember you telling me how much you hated it.
Yeah.
Makes me think that you're a 4 because that's also how I felt, and I'm a 4.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that we hate more than feeling like someone has figured us out.
Yeah. Don't put me in a box.
Yeah. Exactly. Which is exactly what a 4 would say.
Yeah.
Which is fucked up. But, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
I love that EP.
Thank you. I'm stoked on it. I really like it too. We did it all. We recorded it all ourselves too, which was something I hadn't done since I was in high school.
Oh yeah.
And we like really went for it. So, and Tate Mercer mixed it. So it turned out cool.
It's been all over your stuff.
Yeah.
Shout out
to
Tate.
Yeah. Shout out to Tate.
Do you want to do anything with Cash Basket?
Yeah, definitely.
Like big time.
We're going to do a full length for sure. Yeah. It's a band of people that are in bands. Taylor Carpenter is the drummer currently. He plays in Chamber. They're going to be on tour
forever now.
Forever and ever now. Chase plays at Fever Blush. He plays in American Roommates. I mean, he's on tour with Fever Blush right now as we speak.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just kind of when everybody can do it. But, yeah, definitely want to do more. Full length is going to be way different than the EP is. But, yeah, it's going to be sick.
Is Tyler still in the band?
Tyler's still in the band, yeah.
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 It's a weird
I forget
band
to mention
for...
Tyler because he's just around me all the time.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about Cash Basket, we're talking about Cash Basket together usually.
It's weird to like think that two dudes from the band Gideon are making that music.
Yeah, it makes it even funnier. Yeah. Dude. It's so sick. I mean, like, it's not
Dude,
a
Gideon
joke
fans,
band.
Like,
but
know about Cash Basket?
Yeah. Tyler gets comments a lot. Tyler is like the celebrity of Gideon. He's just very recognizable.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody in Gideon is, except, you know, the new members.
You.
But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tyler definitely talks to people about it a lot. Yeah. For sure.
Was there any weird situation with you joining an Equal Vision band after all the Equal Vision stuff happened?
No, I kind of thought there might be. But at the end of the day, you know, I really didn't didn't do anything.
Right. Right.
Personally.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think
they were upset with it, but, yeah, we got dinner together one time.
Word.
It was kind of weird, but
I'm sure.
Yeah. Still, you know, I love playing Gideon though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did that actually come about?
That was, maybe October of 2016. And,
was it just because of the connection with Tyler?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I just wasn't doing anything. And, at first it was, Tyler asked me to fill in on bass and, did that for a tour. Then they asked me again to go out on another tour the following year and, did it again, you know, and then eventually just became a member, then eventually switched to guitar, and yeah.
Are you writing with them at all, or you're like a full
We're about to go to the studio, yeah.
Man.
Writing with Gideon is a little weird because the band is a little displaced across, around the southeast, but yeah, gonna go to the studio.
That's crazy.
Bump out some jams.
They've been going forever.
Nine years, dude.
They just haven't stopped.
They really haven't. They got into an accident and continued the entire tour.
What?
After getting their van wrecked.
That's insane.
Completely totaled.
Yeah, those dudes are just road warriors.
They are, for sure. Have learned a thing or two from them, without a doubt.
I believe it.
Yeah.
So then I guess that brings us to Better Off again.
Yeah.
You just put out a couple jams.
Uh-huh.
Head down.
Yeah.
Bad Habit.
Yeah.
Tell me about them.
Okay.
Shout out Tate Mercer again.
Shout out Tate Mercer, legendary Nashville engineer and producer.
Facts.
I don't know. What do you want to know about him? What should I talk about?
What, in like a more spiritual sense, like what made you want to continue doing Better Off?
I just missed it, man. It just like from the beginning, Better Off songs have just been my... like it's been my soul coming out into that music. So like I missed having that just that outlet. I mean, you know, it was just totally different, and it's like a familiar place because it's the way I write songs was just formed around that band.
Yeah.
So it's familiar, it's comforting, it's what I like to write.
It seems like every other project that we talked about, they're all kind of like experiments in a way, you know.
Yeah.
They're all like either co-writing or they're you doing some other kind of thing that mm-hmm. other people want to do with you because mm-hmm. you're a good writer, or you're trying to maybe stretch yourself artistically.
Yeah.
And Better Off is you.
Yeah, for
Luke
sure.
Luke is Better Off, and Better Off is Luke.
It's where I get to implement everything I've learned and just write songs that I like. Yeah. So that was the main thing, for
where,
sure.
When did those two songs get written?
Man. Bad Habit was written... well, maybe Head Down was written first. Actually, there's a song that we haven't released yet, but that's recorded. That was the first thing that got written. That was around the same time I was working on Cash Basket stuff.
Hmm.
And a couple songs on the record that we're going to do, that we're going to put out are from that era of time. But I'm sorry, what was your question?
It just went like the...
what time frame was it all written? Yeah, it was like started around the Cash Basket time when I was just like writing songs. I'd be like, well, this doesn't sound like something new. It sounds like Better Off. So I'd put it to the side and like continue doing that until I find what goes where. But Bad Habit was written a little more recently, maybe sometime in the downtime last year. I'm not sure when, because we played a lot of shows. But
is that kind of like... I mean, lyrically, that song kind of sounds like an apology in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways, yeah. Definitely. And it's...
that was what I thought when I first heard
it. Yeah, that's a big part of it. So it's a combination of an apology and also just me acknowledging the things that keep me from doing what I want to do as far as being a good person, or like, you know, being open and communicative and all that stuff. But yeah.
And then Head Down just got released kind of recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's about panic attacks, because I have a serious problem with panic attacks at the moment.
Didn't know that.
And lately, yeah. That specifically, that song is about a time on tour last year with Gideon where I passed out for like 2 minutes maybe and like started turning blue and woke up to the guys in the band just like punching me in the chest and like slapping me in the face, trying to get me to wake up and like screaming on the phone with the ambulance and all this stuff. And like, yeah, this is intense. And yeah, it's about that. And that spawned a whole new level of like panic attacks in day-to-day life for me. So
I'm kind of surprised you're even talking about them, because I know that's kind of a thing with panic attacks, is the fear of always having
more. Yeah,
I'm actually learning about them right now.
Really?
It's cool.
Yeah. I'm kind of getting over it. I've been going to a therapist, you know, cut out coffee, cut out so many things, just like trying to take care of myself and like get past having panic attacks. But that's what that song's about. Guitar solo
rips,
could cause a panic attack.
It rips. So there is a new Better Off record coming.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
I have details, but I can't really say them on the podcast. Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah,
This is coming out later.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's going to be set in stone by then. Yeah.
But that's exciting.
Big moves though.
That's exciting. Yeah. I'm super excited about that.
I'm excited.
I remember Charles sent me the two songs before you guys put them up, and it's like you never left, you know, like it sounds exactly what the next Better Off record would have sounded like to me.
I think that's cause it's like, that's my, you know, my energy that I put into that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
All that's happened in the time between when we stopped playing and us putting out this new stuff is I've just been practicing, trying to get better at songwriting and playing guitar and just like being a stable person and all this stuff, and all of that kind of manifests itself in this new stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Which is exciting, and I like being able to hear the outcome of it, you know.
It makes me feel like nostalgic, but also not even nostalgic because it sounds like, you know, like Jimmy World or something, like nostalgic to the times we just talked about, to that era, you know, to those moments earlier this decade, as I said before. But it makes me so excited to see you doing that, because I saw you I worked with you like in the moments where there was nothing happening, you know.
Saw me in a dark place.
Yeah. And someone like you, who I've said publicly, I've said privately, and I'll say it again, you're literally one of my favorite songwriters ever.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. And so to see you going through that was like heartbreaking to me, because I feel like these songs need to happen.
They're going to happen regardless. At this point, I just feel like, you know, people can and should think whatever they feel is right is right. But at the end of the day, I have to make music. So, you know, I'm sorry for the things that I'm sorry for, and I hope that people like listening to the music, and if they don't, that's okay, but if they do, that's awesome.
Have you gotten any kickback from people?
You know, very little. And the people that kick back usually are a little misguided on like how things went.
Yeah.
You know, but
I feel like the story you told will hopefully set the record straight.
Yeah, but I hope so. It's hard to talk about it without going into extreme detail. Yeah. And I don't want to go into extreme detail, because at the end of the day...
Well, we can cut out anything you want to cut out.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it, I don't think. I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll send you it before...
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But, yeah, well, it was interesting when you put the songs out, because it both kind of felt like... Like, no, yeah, there wasn't like Alt Press and Chorus FM like knocking down your door trying to, you know, post about it or anything. Mm-hmm. But there also was like a very cool, renewed energy.
You know? It was crazy. It felt really good to just like put out a song.
So I feel like people miss you.
Yeah. Have people naturally react to us putting out something new.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We've never really, it's like, when we put out the first EP, it was like, you know, our friends liked it, and we put this out and our friends liked it. So that's cool. I love that.
Well, I'm your friend. I like it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I can't ask for anything other than that, you know.
So I guess I think we covered just about everything.
Yeah.
Is there anything? I mean, we didn't really talk about Wire Drop, but that was one song. Yeah.
There was only one song. Yeah. It didn't go anywhere because Evan's too busy tattooing and stuff, but.
He's killing it.
He is killing it, dude.
He's doing some crazy shit.
God, I bet he has $10 million.
At least.
At least.
He has so much money that I saw him at Mickey's the other day. And he looks like a normie now.
Yeah.
So.
He's getting married.
Yeah. So it's like, that's how much money he has.
Yeah.
He
he's so rich, he's getting married.
He doesn't dress like a Korean businesswoman anymore.
Yeah. Missed that style, though.
Which, that was tight. Yeah. It was very tight.
It was.
But I hadn't seen him in a while, and it was weird just walking in and being like, oh, that's Evan. Yeah. You look regular.
Yeah.
Look.
This is an adult.
You're an
killing it in
adult.
His industry. Yeah.
Good for Evan.
Mm-hmm.
I love Evan.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll end it. Well, I got two questions at the end for you.
I just want to note before we get to the two questions, Kanye, if you hear this, I think we'd get along great. Just hit me up, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to hang out.
This is the little Uzi Vert of Nashville talking right now.
Little Uzi Vert, but white and can't rap, so.
No, but bro.
But I can hang.
That video with Demi Young Thug I just watched that they just put out, I literally watched it and in my head was like, this is Luke.
I wish it was me.
I don't, like, it's like that energy. Like, can it was
you,
like.
Can you imagine performing at Rolling Loud and just doing the Block Boy on stage? I think that'd be the sickest thing ever. I really think that would be the sickest thing ever.
I remember I watched a video of him. This is like so off the subject, but I remember watching a video of him right before like the All My Friends Are Dead song came out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, it was some video for Complex about shoes and like talking about shoes. And he was just like, yo, these shoes, my friends, and I don't even have friends, but my friends think these shoes are the best. I don't think so, and I don't even have friends. It was like the craziest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah, Lil Uzi Vert, if you want to hang out, I'm definitely down to hang out. It sounds like we're both similar.
Yeah, it's just like so crazy. Like I wonder, like, what was that dude before he was famous? You know what I mean? Because when you're famous, you can do weird shit like
you
that.
Can.
You can indulge every idiosyncrasy that you possibly have.
Yeah. So sick.
So it's like, but like, what were you doing before that? You know?
Probably just sitting in front of a laptop making beats, right. If I had to guess. Yeah.
It's weird. Anyway.
Yeah.
Last two questions.
Let's do this.
Your biggest fan moment. Yeah.
Where I was a fan?
Yeah. Somebody you got to meet, a show you got to play, something like that.
Hmm. Man, I'm a pretty mild-mannered person, so I never have, like, big fan-out moments. But the time I was most intimidated because I was a fan of a person was definitely Newfound Glory.
Hmm.
Meeting those guys and just, like, trying to talk to them. Someone upstairs is watching Full House.
Yeah. I was like, what the heck is that? Yeah, I'm sure that had to be crazy.
Yeah, that was intense. It was cool. Yeah.
So that's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last question, what are you most proud of all the things?
Most proud of?
You got a lot to choose from.
Hmm.
It can be creatively, it can be in life.
Man, that's hard. I'll say emotionally, I'm most proud of what this Better Off record is going to turn into because it's already, I mean, we're halfway done, but it's already like my favorite by a long shot. But physically, I'm most proud of last year and touring 145 days around the world. That was another big achievement in my mind.
It's kind of funny because you didn't do it the way you probably thought you were going to do it.
Not at all.
Or even in a certain sense,
no,
the way you wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And that's no slight to Gideon at all. You
know?
No. That's
they
just
know.
Like,
I mean, they know that what kind of music I want to play, but they're also just like extremely supportive guys and driven guys. And, you know, they're willing to rough it to go see these cool places. And I learned a lot from doing that, you know, because, you know, Better Off would have been roughing it too, but this was a little bit more roughing it, you know? it's a little bit, it's heavier music. It's harder to be around constantly.
Yeah.
And it can be exhausting playing those shows. You get drenched in sweat every single night, no matter what. You know, that's not what playing in a pop rock band is like.
Right.
So yeah, that was an achievement in my mind for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bro. You've done a whole lot of shit.
Yeah.
In your very short run around the world.
Yeah. Gonna do more.
I mean, this is the 40th episode.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations. So happy 40 episodes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like, whether people like them or not, I'm going to put them out. I don't care. Because I like...
That's how I feel.
I like talking to my friends.
Yeah.
So, or people that want to come on the podcast. Yeah. Whoever, you know.
And I've been jeweling all 40th episode.
Well, dude, thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Well, Kyle isn't here, so I'll just say Lucas. Cut it, Lucas. Today's music was Bad Habit by Better Off, which is a new single that came out this year, produced by Tate Mercer. So you should go check that out on Spotify or wherever you get your jams. Big thank you to Luke for coming on the podcast and for telling the whole story of him. Thank you to Kyle at the Tiny Tape Room for inviting me out to go to Mickey's, and also for being the producer of the podcast and for being the sweetest person that exists on the planet. Thank you to Lucas at The Sanctuary for doing all the video stuff that he does. He is responsible for all the videos you see on our Instagram or Twitter. Thank you to Charles at Platoon for designing the logo. He is incredible. And if it wasn't for the belief of Charles and Kyle from the Tiny Tape Room, you may know him from the Cut of Kyle at the end of the show. If it wasn't for the belief from the two of them, this show would have never even existed. So big shout out to both of them. Lastly, a big shout out to you guys. Thank you for listening. Be a fan of your friends and love one another.